So we have a couple of guests here with us today. Dave and Nori are visiting, and Dave wanted to share a Bible verse with us. And if you're not familiar with Dave, this is not an unfamiliar thing for us, for Dave to want to share.
Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence cometh my help? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. He who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. The Lord shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your coming in and your going out from this time forth, even forevermore. Psalm 121, verses 1 through 8, the Psalm of David.
Amen.
All this year, we've been talking about connecting, growing, and going as a congregation and as individuals, and we've been hearing from a number of people who are doing just that, who are connecting, growing, and going, people who are doing that here in Ottawa and people who are doing that really across the globe. And today we have the pleasure of hearing from Greg Bell. He's going to be sharing about his trip to Tanzania.
I need something to set this on, so yeah, probably so. Thank you. Good morning, people of Ottawa. This is let me take just a second to look. I don't get to do this very often. This is a real opportunity for me for a number of reasons. Let's see. As Pastor Redding mentioned, when he first contacted me about this whole situation, I wanted to parallel exactly what he told me about your theme for the year, the Connect, Go, Grow. And I thought it would be wise to start with helping you understand who I am. How am I connected to you all? I think we're all connected, quite frankly. But let's see. The main reason I'm here is because of my parents. My parents were born and raised here in Ottawa. I actually went to high school here as well. Some of you will know me. Many of you will not. But they not only support my wife and I in this organization that we're involved in, they routinely put our group on your church's prayer list when we are getting ready to go on a trip. I think we're on their prayer list all the time, to be honest. But I wanted to call out my parents, so to speak, obviously, for many reasons. I also, as I mentioned, am already connected to Ottawa. Goes a long ways back, but it's an opportunity for me to come back to visit Ottawa, and it's always such a pleasure to do so. The third listing there, Grace Community Church, that's not a misprint. That is actually the name of the church that I attend in Tempe, Arizona, where I live. And so we're kind of a sister church, sort of a connection, if you think about it. The organization that I'm involved in, I'm wearing their shirt, is named Developing Workers, and I will tell you more about them in just a moment, but this, notice already how interconnected this situation is. And above all, I want to give the glory to God for all of our connections and be thankful for that. So, bear with me. I wanted to explain a little bit who Developing Workers is. We have a website I listed up there. There's a history to it, and I don't want to bore you with that. It probably won't be real memorable to you all either, but there's three basic parts to it. Foundations Global is, well, let me back up a moment. Developing Workers, our whole purpose is to spread the gospel throughout the world, locally where we live, and then thirdly, in this third branch called Mobilize or Mobilize Medical, through bringing communities in the parts of the world that we travel to into the church, We have a strategy that's evolved over a long period of time in doing that. That's where the medical role comes in. I might explain a little more again why I'm involved in this organization. I'm a family practice physician, and the ability to go into foreign countries and offer medical help partly depends on justifying that we can be there. A lot of countries might be suspicious, and we as an organization need to prove that we're there for the right reasons. And it's really not about the medical part. We use that more to draw the community in so that we can share the gospel through our flow. Let's see. My clicker's not working there. Can you advance that for me, Dave? Yes. So the dates in which we traveled are up there. I believe that's 11 days. I'll probably need you to advance that for me, it looks like, from here on. And this is the team of 13 people that went on this trip. Sorry, I'm having some technology problems. The laser comes off the trigger, right? Oh, thank you. And I'm having a little trouble with that as well. I think I have a contingency plan. Oh, I left it in my backpack. Sorry, the laser's not working. You know what? I think I can manage without it. You won't know these people. This effort to go out again was highly affected by the pandemic, as you can easily imagine. Everybody on that picture has been on a trip before, and something I think that always stands out whenever I go on one of these trips, these are not only medical people. There's a lot of people that don't seem to have anything to do with medicine, and oftentimes people wonder, what could they really do to help? Do they have a role? Next to me, squatting lowest in the picture, that's myself, is my wife. So there's one couple. The two people behind us are another couple, and the woman behind me, she's actually very prominent in this organization. She's the director of Mobilize Medical. But anyway, she and her husband attended. She has two daughters there. There's my wife is an accountant. There's an engineer. There's a city council member. There's two pastors. There's volunteers, obviously. It's a volunteer organization. And then next slide. Whoops. I think it's working now. this was our route. The organization is all volunteers, and that has implications over how we travel and trying to be cost effective, because everybody has to raise funds on their own to attend. My parents help my wife and I greatly in that regard. So we get flights that are often less expensive, typically have connections, and the downside of that is it takes longer to get there and it takes longer to get back. But this journey was about a 30-hour trip just to get there from when we left Phoenix, Arizona. And the route included going through Dallas, where we ran into our first major stumbling block. We had to switch airlines at that point from American Airlines to Qatar Airways. Qatar would not allow us on because they said all of our COVID tests expired while we were in flight, while we would have been in flight from Doha, Qatar, to Tanzania. So we were waylaid. And that initial plan, May 22nd through June 1st, we ended up having to stay in Dallas and make a decision. We had to make a decision, do we return back to Phoenix and just give up, or do we carry on? And I will tell you, when I reflect on this, this is where your prayers had huge impact. We all, of course, once we got the word from the airline and said, nope, you are not getting on this flight, this was after, just as they shut the door, We reconvened. We probably all vented a little bit. Then we did a lot of praying, and we decided we're going to carry on. There was a lot of infrastructure in place at this time that we just could not give up on, new relationships, et cetera. Two of our members had already flown ahead and had no problem following the protocol that we had, so it was really frustrating. Nonetheless, once we made the decision to stay, we had to deal with another thing, and that is that because we had checked all of our luggage, it was sequestered away by TSA, so we had to stay in Dallas two nights until their next flight. Instead of being on a Saturday, it was on a Monday. But one of the joys that I observed as soon as we made the decision to carry on, we had to make all these contingency plans to stay in Dallas without luggage, just with our carry-ons. All these young people pull out their phones and they're immediately just tapping away, looking for lodging, looking for transportation, you know, all these kinds of things. It's sort of fun to see that. But it did work out. So anyway, we ended up making it on forward. We land in that little arrow up there over in the, on the, it'd be on your left side, I guess, is where the country of Qatar is located. And then we had to switch over and fly down to Tanzania. So we made it. Here's where I want to introduce you to my wife. Well, I guess I already showed one slide, but see the women with their hand up? Hi, Jean, if you're watching. We did make it. Look at the weather. It was kind of interesting because I don't know if you noticed, that's in the southern hemisphere, so it's on the other side of the equator, and it was cloudy. They're getting closer to winter at this time, late May. I wanted to show a couple of slides here that was about the hassles of dealing with COVID. We had made the decision to go to Tanzania way back in probably April after a lot of other plans had to be changed. The country of Tanzania had no restrictions until May 4th, so we got very far along, at which point then the country announced all of the major sort of restrictions, testing, face masks, et cetera, distancing. And so upon arrival, this was May 22nd, they had only been practicing this and were still ramping up on the whole process and how to have in-country testing, et cetera, et cetera. If you look real closely, there's lots of keying up there. Those are individuals in front of the airport sign there that are sort of a wall. Then once you get indoors, I was going to use the laser to point out, if you look very closely, it's hard to see, but on the table there, they take your passports. The first time I had that experience, it was a little unnerving, but because, you know, you're kind of led to believe, don't let your passports ever leave your hands or your body. They're all stacked up there. There's a stack of them right in front of the woman, and you can even see the pictures of some people's passports on there. And then you go to another key where they call you in and do the nasopharyngeal testing, and then you just wait for the result. And luckily, everybody was negative yet again. Keep in mind, at this point, we had had a test before we left Phoenix, Arizona, another one when we were in Dallas, and then upon arrival, the country had mandated testing on everybody, no matter what you had. That was our third test in, gosh, you know, 2 weeks. So here's another map of the country, and I wanted to point out, if you look closely on the blue line there, upon arrival, we had another 3.5-hour drive just to get to our destination. It was very exhausting, quite frankly. The next slide, before I go to the next slide, I wanted to point out, if you look at the vertical part of that, darn, I wish my laser worked, but it's hard for me to describe. If you look to the, it'd be to your right, that's where Mount Kilimanjaro is located, and as we were driving on the vertical part of the blue line, the view will be looking that direction. And I wanted to show that shot to you. So this is what the scenery looked like. And then I circled, if you look very, very closely, you might be able to see Mount Kilimanjaro right there. That was really an awesome view. It really sticks up there. I apologize for not having higher quality images. Everybody just takes pictures with their phones for the most part. But this is on our drive to our first destination, which was named Kitembiene, as you can see written up there. And as we're driving along, we start seeing animals. Here was somebody looking out and spotted an ostrich. And then we saw some zebras. I might point out on this image as well, an interesting little thing about Tanzania and Kenya as well. They really don't have fencing. I believe there may even be laws in the country. They just don't have fencing throughout the country. We would see some fences around certain homes where they created their own, I think, for security. But the country itself, they just do not have fences. So all these animals roam free. And then after the zebras, we started seeing lots of giraffes. So that was really an amazing sight, just driving through the countryside. Somebody on our team, of course, reminded everybody, you know, you get used to seeing birds and some deer sometime. And in another part of the world, I guess you get used to seeing zebras and ostriches and giraffes just driving through the countryside. One of the things about our mission trips, you know, people naturally wonder what's it like, what's the accommodations, etc. And I have one shot. Dave, can you advance that, please? I know that doesn't have a lot of excitement in it, but our lodging is strategically chosen. My friend Kelly Ramblin, who is the woman I pointed out on that early image, who attended with her husband, knows people all over the world. She's been doing this a very long time, and she contacts locals. The locals are very helpful. They find appropriate lodging, and there's a number of issues to consider. We're generally very fatigued, and it's important, you know, to take care of our own health. We need to have some fundamental things. This is a typical just kind of lodging situation. There's a mosquito net above. When you go to Africa, it's wise to have mosquito nets, especially at nighttime. And they just drape them up and pull them out of the way during the day, and then you pull them down at night. Oops. And each of the places we stayed, or each of the rooms we stayed in, did have individual shower and restrooms or toilets. I wanted to show this because this is the hot water source for the showers. It's wood-fired water heating. Consequently, the hot water would run out rapidly. That's pretty typical as well when you're traveling. It was kind of a neat thing to observe. This, on the other hand, is very typical of what it's like when we're out in our clinics seeing patients. I took this picture, and one reason I took it is I was just sort of impressed with the effort of the local people to keep what they have clean. I mean, look at the squeegee thing and the toilet bowl cleaner. I know it's a little odd of a shot, but compared to some of the ones we've seen on previous trips, it was just kind of impressive. They call them squatty potties. You can maybe guess how you use the restroom. That bucket of water there is, after you're finished, you just pour some water down and it washes things away. That's the technique. So if you ever travel third worlds and are wondering where you're supposed to go, now you're informed. This is just an interesting shot I took myself. That actually is also from the squatty potty. It has ventilation. I was just intrigued by a number of things. This was in a matter of 10 seconds, probably. I had my phone, and of course, I didn't want to drop it, so it did not focus on the part I wanted to focus on. But those bricks, they make their own bricks locally, and it just struck me how there's termite mounds all over the country. You see them everywhere, but looking through the view there, you can see a termite hill, and then notice the wood across the top. I thought, well, that's interesting. Lots of food for the termites. They construct it, you know, safely as they best know. Let's see. Dave, I think I need your help on that one. This image is to depict what occurs for lunchtime on our clinic days. The one of the challenges is staying healthy. It's, if you're casual about it, it's pretty easy to get, especially gastrointestinal infections, but if you just pay attention, you can generally avoid it quite well. But we are served lunch by the locals, and we always have a challenge. Everybody has to just go through this based on their own risk tolerance. The locals prepare lunch for us using local food, and they typically put a lot of effort into it. This was their local church. They put the lunch together, and we would take breaks throughout the day, or rather stagger who would go to lunch because it gets very busy. They do usually provide heated food, and that helps, as you can imagine. Whoops. And then in the evenings, we typically eat at the site of where we lodge. This is just a team picture again. The one person missing is Kelly. I think she took that picture. I'll probably at this point out the fella on the bottom left. He's our pastor. He's also very instrumental in creating developing workers as an organization, Pastor Michael. And now I wanted to show you some examples of the people of Tanzania. So it'll probably strike you right away. Look at the color there. They wear what are called shukas, those wraps. I don't think I saw anybody the entire time we were there that had hair longer than maybe 1 inch. There's a lot of shaved heads there. It's just the nature, probably for many reasons or reasons I don't know. But compared to other trips, some of the places that I've been, that our team has been, we have to deal with lice. And it was kind of nice to have a hairless society because we just really didn't see any of that. This is a very typical way they carry their babies around. Have no idea how old that woman was. You really couldn't estimate that very easily, but there were a lot of kids on backs, I will say that. I'm sure we saw this child in the clinic. I don't remember for sure, but see the snotty nose there? That's pretty typical. And the flies. This was an image of just probably somebody had a newer iPhone. See the quality of that image? That wasn't my picture. I had to borrow it. Anyway, look at the jewelry there. That was very typical. And the ears, if you see the ears, they pierced them. I have some other shots here that'll show that a little more easily. And she's wearing a cross. Tanzania, as a country, has a large Christian influence. There's some really fascinating history that we learned about the people. There's a tribe, the highly representative tribe, they're called the Maasai. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of that tribe, but the Maasai as a people is actually mentioned in the Bible. I forget the Bible verse, but the local pastor pointed this out. And what he told our team is Maasai means something like this. It means something like he who left and never returned. And that just really intrigued me to learn about that. As a population, historically, they've been a very mobile tribe. And they, you know, migrate around based on the weather patterns for where the animals are and where the water is, I suppose. Yeah, Dave. You know, let me point out something on this image that might be a little confusing. Notice the terrain is quite different. I had to choose certain scenes from two different locations. And I'll give you a little more context at this point. Our entire journey, which is very typical of a medical mission trip, we typically will have two different sites that we go to. This is the second site, so the terrain looks quite different. That drier, more arid environment was our first site, the town called Kitembiene, which I showed you that earlier. So that's why it might be confusing about why the terrain's different. What I really wanted to demonstrate or depict in this image, they measure their wealth in their animals, the size of their herds. They primarily have lots of cattle and then goats. And you can predict kind of what was served for lunch on that basis. The men seemed to all be herders. And then we had, of course, our translators and our local medical staff. Those are the only roles that I ever saw. Herders, clerical staff, and then translators. And I think the translators all were brought in from somewhere because they had to be bilingual, obviously. Those trees are very typical of all over, everywhere we went, and I believe they're all acacia trees, is what we were told, a form of an acacia. They call that one tree the umbrella tree. That's what the locals call it. Here's another image of a series of women with their jewelry and wearing their shuka, a baby, with his cap on. They are dressed warmly because, as I mentioned, winter was approaching, and to them it was cool. That was a nice respite for us compared to other mission trips. It was a little cooler. And, of course, we came from Arizona, where we're used to the desert. Let's see, Dave, I think I need you again. This is a typical image of a male with his herding stick. So it seemed like every male we saw had a stick like this. You can see the knife he carries on his side. They all carried, most of them carried one that was a little longer than that. And we all noticed them and sort of thought, you know, that's not just for show. And as you would predict, we asked the local pastor, you know, what do they carry the machetes for? And they have to hack away at greenery oftentimes to get their animals out. The acacia trees have thorns everywhere. And he said, and of course for protection. So, kind of makes you think. Let's see, Dave. And this is just an image of some kids. They have little lollipops. They had already been seen in our clinic. But look how colorful that is. I suspect that taller child, that is probably a congenital thing, the flattening of the head, but I didn't see those two kids myself. Okay, Dave. I took this shot. It may not mean as much to you all as it did to myself and those of us on our team, but there's a culture aspect to why I took it. The dog, obviously, is the center of the image. In some parts of the world where we have been, the dogs are very wild and very scared of people, and they are really aloof. That dog was very comfortable just walking through, flopped down, sleeping, ears down. My wife's a dog person. Of course, that's one reason she took the shot. But there's a cultural difference. It was really interesting because I guess it's the way they cherish animals and take care of animals. It was just an interesting difference compared to other places that we have been. And here's a mother just feeding her child. I just like what a loving look she's given her baby there. Again, very colorful. This is in the second location, so it was a different terrain. Next one. Here's an image of a man. There weren't as many males that would come into our clinic. I guess they were all off working, you know, herding. The animals are out feeding during the day. This man brought his son in. Next image. And I wanted to show you this. This was extremely prevalent. In each of the two locations where we did our work, we did have some local medical people. The first place we had two. the countries we typically go to, when they can, they often will have some of their local medical people come with us. And I think part of it is to vet us, to ensure that we're doing the right thing and we're not taking advantage of their people. But I bring this up at this point because, you know, we would ask the local medical staff about this phenomena. I asked this one doctor, a truly well-trained physician that worked in our second location along with us, about, you know, the culture impact of this. I was curious because I thought surely we're going to see ear infections and some cartilage infection related things, he said, but they never see it. He didn't know enough about how they did it, but boy, I tell you, that is something, because you may not recognize it. That goes through the cartilage of the what's called the pinna of the ear. See that abrupt horizontal part where the hard part sticks out of the ear? They just cut right through the cartilage. And I think they use some expanders, like, you know, the local, well, people here, they do that gauging where they try to expand the earlobe. Anyway, I just found it interesting from a medical standpoint. And then here's another image. Notice how this baby is on her front, not on her back. I don't know. I just love her smile. She's, I think, being a great example to her own kids. See that hit of a smile in the older boy, and then that baby is just naturally smiling. Some of that probably comes naturally, but oh my goodness, is that a warm smile. And at this point, I wanted to go in a little more detail about, again, developing workers. What is it we do? There's a lot of structure to this that has evolved over time. We learn from every single trip. These represent the stations. There's a registration station. One characteristic of that station is that we can often get some local people to help us. Keep in mind, we only had 13 people, and there's already 6 stages right there. But registration is where it's the first line that people line up, where we get name, try to get age when available, and then height and weight information, like vital signs for a medical assessment. The next station, Community Safety Initiative, that was added only 3 or 4 years ago to our flow, and this came from a recognition that if we're dealing with the spiritual side of humans, as well as the physical side, we're forgetting about their behavioral health. I hope that, especially having gone through this pandemic, that people are recognizing how important this is in life. It has tended to be neglected because it's hard to measure and assess. We added this 3-4 years ago after a trip to India, when we were just hearing heartbreaking stories of abuse and things of this nature, and we just felt like we had to start integrating this into our method, our flow. So the second station being it's called the Community Safety Initiative. The third one is where the medical people all assess individuals, and then we try to deal with not only their physical suffering, but at times their emotional things. And we structured the examiners after the Community Safety Initiative purposely in case there were signs of abuse that would help us recognize it. The next station, nutrition, is where every individual would get vitamins. Most of the places that we travel, well, all the places we travel, there's issues of nutrition and malnutrition. We also have a routine to always treat for parasites because they are so prevalent in the countries where we go. Infants don't get a parasite treatment, but virtually everybody else does. They at least get offered and have a choice not to take it. Some countries actually do a structured deworming through the schools, and it varies a lot. Sometimes it's once every 6 months, once a year, and so we always ask if they have recently been treated, but it's just part of our flow. We've learned it makes a difference. A lot of the places we travel, it's much, much more focused on children, the pediatrics. And it's really amazing how if a child is stunted early in life, it basically, I would use the word, condemns them to inability to learn throughout the rest of their life. There's a critical period in life where nutrition, et cetera, matters. Well, it turns out parasitizing, you know, takes away nutrition. It interferes with their ability to grow. And that's one reason we've integrated that into our flow. The next station is pharmacy, which is where not everybody has to go through pharmacy. Occasionally, the examiners can identify that certain people really don't need any kind of other medicine, and they can divert. But many end up going through pharmacy, you know, to treat skin conditions and a variety of things that we deal with. And then the last is the spiritual counseling, which I hope to convey is, you know, extremely important. It's, I think, probably even the most important endpoint where we offer and, you know, to ask people about, have you heard of Jesus? And do you know anything about the gospel? And then it can start a conversation. I'll try to move through these next a little more rapidly. I don't want you to necessarily have to see a lot of this. I thought I'd show you because at the registration station, notice at the very top I've got the green. Everybody gets a form, and this is part of how we can keep track of things. Next one. You won't be able to read those either, but there's a number of conditions. They're all in alphabetical order. This is what the examiners get really tuned in on identifying and offering to help over. We obviously can't treat everything, but there are simple things that allow us to relieve some physical suffering, at least in the short run. Page 3 there, at the bottom right corner, is a list of all of our special meds. This is where we need physicians on the trips because there are many meds can harm people, and we really, above all, cannot harm people. We have to do our best to always be cognizant of that. But there are other things that inevitably occur on these trips. There have always been some crisis-type situations. Next page. This is the page that is used to get at the behavioral health aspect of what is going on in an individual's life. Again, I don't think you can read that, but the very top simply asks, who's in your household? And then there's a series of 5 very open-ended questions. You know, is there somebody you are afraid of in your home? And do you have somebody you can trust? And it moves on down. We're trying to just let it be easy for a child in particular, or anybody, to share worries about their life. Next page. This was just an image, really, of a registration. It's in the far distant corner of this image is a registration at the first clinic site where we attended in Kitimbene. Next page. This is a little video, and I just took it primarily so you could kind of see how busy it gets and what it sounds like. Can you go and start it, Dave?